Star Trek 57, M23, take two.
It's the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
They call that stuff fire.
Taos lightning, straight bourbon. Try some in small amounts. It was considered medicinal.
Label it for external use only.
Well, it just takes a bit of getting used to, Captain. Actually, a man could grow quite fond of this stuff.
Take it easy, Mr. Scott. I hate to think what that stuff's doing to your stomach lining.
And your reflexes. We're going to need fast reflexes from now on. There's no negotiating with the herbs. We know that.
Aye. Oh, if we only had a phaser.
Or a communicator. It'd be a pleasure to watch those herbs as we beam back to the ship at exactly 4:59:30.
Could we make a communicator?
Impossible, Captain. In this century, there are no metal alloys or power sources to make devices such as ours.
The problem is clear, Spock. We're going to have to seek contemporary solutions. Where's Chekhov?
Mr. Chekhov is involved, Captain.
Okay. All right. I'd say it's about time we begin the podcast. According to the schedule. So this is the It's Got Star Trek podcast, and we welcome you to that podcast. It's episode 222.
Yes, of course.
Of the
222
of the It's Got Star Trek podcast.
Precisely.
Yes. It's a fun number, 222.
Is it though?
Yeah, but that's the thing, is it's not. It is, it comes across as an interesting number because there's like a bunch of twos. And twos are interesting. You like twos because you like prime numbers, right, Dan?
Yeah, but I know two is a special prime number, but I don't care as much about that.
You're not into number. Like the twos being strung in a row is nothing. It doesn't excite you in any way.
No.
Well, that's fair. Like I said, when you see it, when you first think, you're like, oh, this is episode 222. Let's do something crazy. It's like, well, what do people do for 222? I guess you could divide it in two.
They do not exist.
Indeed.
That's what they do.
They do not exist. Okay. Yes, welcome. Welcome to the It's Got Star Trek podcast. News-em-ups. One news-em-up. The news-em-up is that Jesse is full of Griblies.
Possibly.
Jesse is...
could be likely. Yeah.
Quarantining himself out of for good measure. He feels fine, apparently, certainly fine enough to podcast, but he will be doing so remotely.
Yeah, but I might not be feeling so fine for too much longer.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that throughout the duration of the podcast to see if if Jesse's still feeling a-okay.
The disease must be destroyed.
But yes, so Jesse is remote, so he's with us, but it's just apologies in case
I'm over here.
In case Dan and I act up. Sometimes Dan and I act up a bit.
What happened? Where have I been?
When Jesse's not here to just look at us.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching.
We're going to get silly.
You bushwhack him!
We're going to bushwhack each other.
All right. So yes, if you've clicked on this, maybe it's come up in autoplay. I don't know. A lot of people have their podcast on autoplay, so they don't necessarily know what it's about. However, this type of program, the It's Got Star Trek podcast, does discuss Star Trek episodes. You probably know that much. So it makes sense to have watched the episode ahead of time or to have some memory of it. I suppose you, strictly speaking, don't have to do that. I've heard tell of people who enjoy listening to the podcast without actually watching the episode. So I can understand that. If that's what you're doing, that's fine,
too. That would be difficult for me to do, to like listen to.
I've done it with a movie review podcast and some TV podcasts. There are some podcasts that I enjoy the personalities of the hosts sufficiently that I can get enjoyment out of them, even if I'm not directly or recently familiar with the subject matter being discussed. Mm-hmm. However, those podcasts generally do a much better and much more coherent job of summarizing the plot of the episode under discussion.
Unquestionably.
Yeah.
than us.
Guaranteed.
Yes. We make no promises, nor much effort towards any sort of regular summary format.
But it is absolutely impossible.
I do think we've tried it a couple times and it's never quite worked out. Mm-hmm. But anyway. Anyway,
we get sidetracked sometimes.
Sometimes there's sidetracked. Right.
I think last week we didn't actually start the episode until like 18 minutes in or something. That was a long time.
It's not the longest though.
We've gone longer.
Yeah.
We can go. We can make sure to go longest tonight if we want.
No, we won't. We shouldn't.
No,
we shouldn't do that
because that would be. There's a certain value in purposefully aggravating your audience, but only if you're doing it in sort of a playful, needling way. Mm-hmm. Just that they're in on the joke, they're having fun, they're like, "Ha ha, okay, yes, you're playing the sound over and over again. We get it." Yeah. there's a charm to it, but you know, there's also limits.
Steve O'Brien.
Precisely.
Okay. Chief O'Brien.
All right, but we do want to get to the episode as swiftly as possible. And that episode, well, this is what I keep forgetting. I keep forgetting to name the episode. Mm. We are discussing Star Trek, the original series, Spectre of the Gun.
Tombstone, Arizona, in 1881.
That's Spectre with an R-E, not an E-R. Mm-hmm. And that is the sixth episode of the third season. However, it was the first produced. So some places, of course, as is just the nature of TOS, will show a different number for it. But we are going with just sort of the general Wikipedia, IMDb, et cetera, production, not production order, you know, airing order.
Fascinating.
We've gone back.
Interesting.
We've gone back and forth on this in the past.
Interesting.
But I think it's just easier to do with the airing order. Okay. So.
So was there a newsy doozy?
No, the news was that Jesse.
Are they on the rad tonight?
Is no, okay. The news I'm up is that Jesse's remote.
Oh, that's
already
that's
done
on
that.
The rad, man.
Yeah, oh, man. Jesse's over there. So that's the news I'm up.
Of course,
over here,
silly.
On the rad.
We do have a voicemail, a brief voicemail from Frasier.
Hailing frequencies.
That we need to, we'll listen to the voicemail first, and then we will get to a fulsome discussion of Spectre of the Gun. All right.
Fire away.
All right, but first, Frasier.
Hey, guys, it's Frasier again, the guy who talked about Archon. I don't want you to put this on the air, but I do want you to address this on the air. Yeah. How the fuck do I give you money? I went to your fucking goddamn website, and there's no way to, like, join a Patreon or a special group that gets, like, special shit. I know you guys have talked about this.
We have.
Why can't I fucking find it? I mean, to be fair, I'm fucking drunk and stoned, so. Yeah, you know what? You can put this on the air if you want. I don't care, but people need to know how to give you money, because I'm trying to do it, and I'm failing, fuckers.
Yeah, thank you, Frasier.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, we have discussed it. And
thanks, Agamemnon.
We have discussed
thank
it.
Thank you.
I forgot you have this whole thing of thank you.
No, thank you.
Did you get a new thank you this week? So Dan
thank
has
you,
been,
Colonel.
Dan
thank
has
you.
Been
thank you.
Collecting thank yous.
Thank you.
No thanks to those Romulan vultures.
Oh, that wasn't quite the one I wanted.
Ah, but that's a good one.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. God,
we'll give prizes. You know what we're gonna do, by the way. Not to get sidetracked. We'll get to Frasier's voicemail.
There was no thank you this week that I know of.
Another thing we've discussed is doing a game show episode. Another game show episode. Dan is really good at these, right? So one of my favorite episodes of It's Got Star Trek is the we had a bonus episode called Star Trek by the Numbers, where Dan kind of put together the questions and it was all like number related stuff in Star Trek.
It was fun.
It was fantastic. It was just a really good time. I think we got to do a podcast with your sound effects. And then, like, for example, like that wall of thank yous. Mm-hmm. People need to go through and, like, identify it. Maybe we can have some fellow podcast hosts from one of our friendly.
Like, figure out what episode.
Friend podcast. Yeah, they got to guess which episode or which character.
Like, we could say 1 point if you guess the series, 2 points if you guess the episode, and 3 points. Or two. I don't know, which is. It'd be harder to guess the character of the episode. I don't know.
Well, I mean, the particulars we can work out at a future time.
For the record, there were two thank yous in this episode, and somehow I missed them.
But you didn't record?
I didn't. I record a bunch of shit, I missed the thank
yous. Are you going to go back after we conclude recording the podcast?
It's like beating a video game. Like, there may be unfinished business, but I really, after I beat it, I don't.
So you're
feel
not
like
you're
going,
not a 100%er.
No, I often am a 100%er, but what I do when I 100% is I get the 100% before I beat it.
I got you.
Occasionally, I have gone back.
Well, that's kind of what I've been in Zelda, you know, Tears of the Kingdom.
I think
I could have gone in and beaten down Ganondorf eons ago, but I want to get all the pieces.
Yeah, so I think it was with Red Dead Redemption, like I'd beaten it the first one and I went back and like finished, got all the hunting like shit, all the like hunted a bunch of shit because hunting is really fun in Red Dead Redemption. So, yeah.
How about you,
that might have been one of the few ones I did that.
Jesse, do you play any video games?
I do not.
All right, so Jesse has nothing to add to that particular conversation.
But yeah, usually I try to 100% before I beat it. That's why it pisses me off when sometimes games shoot you to the end segment.
Yeah.
Before you warn you, and you're like, and I'm like, shit, I wanted to do some more shit.
That's what happened with Breath of the Wild, and it put me off beating the game because you know, if you beat the game, then you beat the game.
Yeah, you can still play it, but
well, sometimes you can't.
Oh, sometimes you can.
Sometimes you can't.
Okay, we're not talking about Star Trek right now.
No, but we are. This is all related because getting back to Frasier's question, Frasier's question was paraphrasing: how do you pay us money as a form of appreciation and or to get sort of bonus content?
Yes, of course.
So we have talked about this, and Frasier's not the first person to ask us about this. But I think we've just also been tremendously lazy about it. However, we do have some ideas. We will try to cobble together some stuff in the very near future because we do have some sources of bonus content that we think might be fun for people who are fans of the show. And then there are a couple of merchandising things that we might be able to put out there just to allow folks like Frasier who are keen to demonstrate their appreciation for our efforts week in and week out to occasionally talk about Star Trek.
But just remember, as always,
I ain't making no big claims about it to nobody. Just so happens.
You really sort of shoved that one in.
I did.
You were like, I want to play that, and I'm not confident.
I didn't know.
That an opportunity will come up later in the podcast.
Right. You have to pick your opportunities. It's like you don't want to get too greedy and wait for the perfect opportunity because you might never get it. So you got to decide to. And I just love the bartender so much in this episode. The
bartender is,
Ed.
Yeah.
It was bartender is great.
The Ed. I think his name was Ed.
Yeah. Okay. So.
In my sound clips, I tagged him Bartender Ed, but as one word, it just looks like bartendered. So isn't that interesting? Little peek behind the curtain there. I bet you didn't know you'd learn that from me tonight.
That is the type of thing that may form the basis of our bonus content.
Oh.
We're going to have a 7-hour podcast that is just Dan describing in intricate detail his process from start to finish.
It's just bits and pieces.
We're not necessarily kidding about that. Okay. So thank you, first of all.
We all die.
Thank you so much, Frasier. We appreciate the kind comments. We do appreciate that you are keen on showing us monetary affection.
Yeah, man. That's awesome.
So we'll work on this. Work on this, and we'll get back to you all when
the people have spoken.
When we have some options out there for y'all to
I just didn't know that anybody would want that, but they do.
People like trinkets and mugs and shit, and people like to, you know, get the secret extra special like you know.
Well, I'm very honored. I feel very honored.
Maybe we'll sell cameos.
Say what? We give wish people a happy birthday or whatever.
Yeah, you have to like read some things. You know, I remember Gilbert Gottfried before he passed. You know, he talked about doing those cameos, and it's just funny the idea that Gilbert Gottfried like sends you a video email.
Happy birthday!
I can hardly believe it.
You know, that sort of thing. Okay,
but yes, thank you, Frasier. Like I said, that's an honor. I appreciate that.
Okay, so if you would like to send us a voicemail, you of course can send us an MP3 or whatever, but if you prefer, we have on our website a voicemail recording service. You can do it from your computer, phone, whatever you like. It's got Star Trek, www.itsgotstartrek.com/record, and that will let you record a message of up to 90 seconds. Alternatively, you send us an email or shoot us a line on social media, and it's Got Star Trek, whatever you like, you know, lots of opportunities. We love to interact with human beings. Okay.
Excellent.
Okay, good. Why don't we move along home?
So 14 minutes in and we're starting.
To the, well, that's not counting, of course, the intro music and the intro clip.
So it's actually more.
Because the format of our show is intro music and then intro clip. And then we start talking.
Doesn't it sound like a funny space word? Intro clip. Intro clip. I'm going on intro trip. Turn it up to in. I'm turning intro trip. Intro trip.
All right.
I'm going intro trip on you. Don't go intro trip on me here.
These are the types of things that normally we would remove and put into the Patreon feed, but you're getting a free preview right now. intro clip.
Intro clip.
Intro clip. Okay. It's got Star Trek number 222. Spectre of the Gun. That's what we're talking about. Spectre of the Gun.
Yep.
Tombstone, Arizona, 1981.
That's when it takes place. In that area of time. It looks like you're looking for something over there. Are you looking for something?
No, I mean, I was just scrolling down my notes a bit.
Okay. Okay.
Because it sounded like you had something to say.
Oh, well.
But you were just being polite because you thought I had something to say.
Yeah. Do you have something to say, Jesse?
No, but I bet you do.
well, let's see. Some notes.
Did you like the episode?
I mean, it was interesting. It was interesting. The premise was absurd, but like, you know, whatever. If you can get by that, it was all right. I mean,
I liked it.
Some interesting bits.
It was interesting.
I like the episode.
Yeah.
It's weird. It was weird. It's a little psychedelic.
It made you think, yeah.
It was interesting.
It's got a little potato monster.
Because at first it's just like, okay, why are we just replaying the events of, Battle at the OK Corral? But then it got to points where they were like trying to figure out how they can use their future knowledge to like win in the past time, you know? And so that was kind of cool.
Classic Star Trek.
And then, of course, they sort of pushed in a social message at the end. So, and it was interesting. I'm using the word interesting a lot. So they were on this. They first when they went to the planet, it was all like steamy and smoky and weird and crazy, and that kind of creeped me out. It was all dreamlike. And then when they went to the Old Westland, there's this like depressing red sky. If you notice, throughout the whole episode, you can hear this slight breeze throughout the whole episode. When it's quiet,
it's like a season 3 planet noise sounds. Season 3 has a lot of weird stuff because that's the season where, like, so Star Trek was canceled. They decided to bring it back. They ended up bringing it back just for one more season, then canceling it. During the third season, Gene Roddenberry was being weird. He was trying to make money and start other projects, and they had less budget. They were put on at a weird time. So that impacts the season overall. But they're not all bad episodes. There's some very good episodes. There are some episodes like Spock's Brain.
I was just thinking about that one, yeah.
Which I can't, we discussed that. Yeah, I can't remember. Did. It was a long time ago.
Where they controlled all of Spock's body with like a controller with like three big buttons on it. And they
I think when we discussed Spock's Brain, I think we even gave them credit for at least they were doing some like crazy shit. They were like, let's get out there and do some wild shit.
Yeah, there was that
shit.
Weird surgery scene at the end. It was all fucking intense. Well,
and in this episode, right from the beginning, even when they're on the bridge before they get to the planet, it's just directed in a really kind of weird way. Like the camera angles are all like strange.
The lighting. The bridge is kind of dark.
Yeah, yeah. There's some odd dark lighting and just odd lighting. And I don't know if it's just the trying to be a little bit different because it's the third season, or if they literally had fewer lights because of the budget restrictions. I don't know.
And speaking of, I'm going to spin back to that budget restriction thing in a second. But in that, as far as the first, on the bridge, Spock was all looking at his like I always imagine his little goggle thing, the console goggles or whatever. It's got some kind of awesome Atari display with vital statistics of everything around him or something.
Or like, but he's playing Snake.
Yeah, or he's just playing Vulcan.
Pac-Man.
Vulcan, or Combat.
Vulcan Snake.
Vulcan Snake.
But when he was all like...
Vulcan Tetris.
But when he was all like...
Fascinating.
When he said fascinating, this is the only time I remember like him saying it and Kirk actually looking at him at, like going like, oh shit. Like when Spock says fascinating, you watch Kirk look at him, Kirk has this like, oh, what the fuck? Something fucked up's going on. Yeah. Like, because he's... And I'd never noticed Kirk do that before. There was that whole weird part about...
True telepaths can be most formidable, Captain. Yeah.
Like, they jumped to the telepathy thing, like, really quickly. So it was...
It's because they all received the message in their own language.
Different languages.
Yeah, I know. I know they... So
all of a sudden, it's like, oh, they must have done it through telepathy.
Right, and that's what I'm saying. It must have been I know, but I'm just saying...
Which is a perfectly fine conclusion, but I'm agreeing with you, Dan. I'm saying it's a totally valid conclusion. To me, it's not the only conclusion.
That's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying, like, when they said, Chekhov goes, it was Russian, Uhura goes, no, Captain, it was Swahili, and then Kirk was like, oh, must be telepathy. Like, he said, interesting, telepathy. Like, he jumped to that conclusion, like, really quickly.
He's the captain.
He's got to jump to conclusions, Matt.
Yeah. And so, I mean, there's things, that other, they might have done like a DNA, or not a DNA scan, but you know what I'm saying? Like, they could have done some kind of scan on them. I don't know, to figure out, I don't know. Could you figure any kind of scans?
You could say they could have some clever audio, you know, spatial audio that targets, you know, like those creepy future ads that where you're walking down the subway or something, and then it, like, two beams of audio, like, go into your head and then make you hear voices.
Yeah.
And then you go crazy.
Or maybe they have to buy Coca-Cola. They could have, that's what you call advertising.
Yeah.
For
our BBC listeners, there are other colas available.
There are, they could have scanned their data banks. You know, it didn't have to be telepathy.
I mean, and clearly they did scan their data banks as they got some information about the Old West.
Right. And so they could have,
I guess
not
it could be their memories. I don't know.
Not necessarily telepathy, you know, that it was going to be, but, you know, that's apparently what it was.
But it, presuming it was telepathy, I did think it was cool that Spock was straight up like, oh, that's fucked up.
Yeah.
If somebody is telepathic, that's some fucked up shit to deal with.
Yeah.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Because, like, sometimes...
True telepaths can be most formidable, Captain.
Yeah, because I think sometimes in more modern sci-fi stories or whatever, it's like, oh, you know, I'm a telepath. And it's like, that's terrifying.
Well, I remember...
Depending on what the definition of telepath
is. Well, I mean, Patrick, I remember you bringing up in the past how telepathy was like this... ESP was big back then, too. So
that's
maybe
true,
that's,
yeah.
That,
or, yeah, in the 60s. And true in it was big in actual scientific circles. Mm-hmm. It was not yet conclusively determined to be nonsense.
Right. So, okay. They apparently don't have universal translators back then.
They do.
So then why is this telepathy? That's why I was like, they must have universal translators, because, like, they meet alien species all the time. They're never like, oh, they speak English. But this time they were.
But I can imagine that, depending on how the universal translator works, that it has a different qualia when the voice is coming through the computer universal translator versus a voice in your head.
That's really stretching it.
I don't think that's stretching it. I think it's pretty, like,
because
we're already in the realm of allowing for telepathy.
No, because
I'm going to allow for telepathy feeling different than a universal translator.
No, but look.
Which is a speaker talking to your ear.
Just because we're in a show and we're talking about telepathy, which like, you know, we have not established as a real thing, just because we're talking about that doesn't mean, like, all the rules go out the window. Like, there's nothing that indicate to us that there was anything different about the aliens, the Melkots' communication with them, and some other random...
Was that the aliens, the Melkots, the Melkotians?
Melkotians. Okay, look.
I was confused by that.
Melkot is a Melkotian. Okay, so I guess plural of Melkot.
Do they make milk?
I don't know. Look,
Hey, Jesse, what you don't know is that Dan looked at me for a moment and it looked like he forgot my name. It's like, look, you piece of shit.
There was nothing in this episode that would indicate that there was any difference between from the communication between the crew and the Melkotians. There was nothing different about that versus them What were the brain people? The Talosians. Yeah. Like what indicated to the viewer that there was something different about that other than them saying, oh, it's telepathy. That was the only indication.
The Talosians, their mouths didn't move and their voices sounded all echoey.
Okay, then pick
and
another.
They had legs.
Then pick a fucking Klingons. I don't know. Pick anyone you want. But there's nothing in this instance that indicates that there should have that there would have been telepathy versus just the universal translator.
That's fine. I'm just saying, to me, it's not, I can easily imagine. The point is you're trying to resolve the question as to why they, why this is an issue. And I'm saying, to me, I could understand them receiving it differently
To me, that's too much. That's too much. That's too much headcanon for me. I just don't think they should have been clearer. I think. I think it should have been clearer.
Infinite diversity and infinite combination.
Come on, no, get out of here.
We're supposed to mean that sincerely, you motherfucker. You're like, fuck you, man. Fuck you and your diversity.
When they were talking about. when they were talking about
don't talk nonsense.
When they were talking about Chekhov was like, you know, 45,000 kilometers, 43,000, like when they were getting closer and closer. Yeah. I worked out the speed, and from this 45,000 to 43,000, it took about 8 seconds of viewer time. So that's 8 seconds. So that's about 900,000 kilometers per hour. Mm. And then the second time when he said 43 to 38, that was 43 to 38, that took about 20 seconds. So that was, I think that was like 900,000 miles per hour too, actually. And then, but the third one, when they went from 38 to 35 in 3 seconds, that was like 3,600,000 kilometers per hour. So it wasn't quite.
You get that song from Rent stuck in my head now.
Oh no, not that song.
You know the song.
I know what song you're talking about. I'm working it out. Yeah, 5,000 times 3 times 60. Yeah. So the first two ones, 45 to 43 and 43 to 38, they were going 900,000 kilometers per hour. But when he said 38,000 to 35,000, they were going 3,600,000 kilometers per hour based upon viewer time, which is not necessarily accurate. As we know, the viewer time does not equal the amount of time they actually experience. But if we're going by what we, the viewer, are watching, that was that. Interesting, huh? I said
Dan,
I was going to...
Dan, you truly have a dizzying intellect.
Wow, thanks. Aw. Aw.
Swirly.
What a sweetie.
That's very nice.
Very nice.
I was going to say real quick, I was going to circle real back. Quick. Let me bookend this whole thing.
Circle back.
I said...
He's bringing this whole train right back around.
You were talking about... budgetary limitations that were possibly present. Now, the whole thing about the scenery in that Old West scene, like, yes, it was cool and it looked like a neat sort of, it was kind of excuse was a little weird. It's like, well, maybe this is all they need to make the pattern. And it looked cool and it gave it this creepy ambiance, like they were inside and it was outside. But that seemed to me like an excuse for like budgetary limitations.
And
right
we actually,
back.
We know that, with certainty that in the background materials, I'm sure Jesse came across this as well. I was reading about how, they just simply could not afford the other sets. And they couldn't get the set dressing because normally those stand-ups, those are
set
used.
Set dressing, do you put that on a Caesar salad or a wedge salad or like a Cobb salad? No, you don't put it on any of those. You put Caesar dressing on a Caesar, you put blue cheese dressing on a wedge salad, and you put, I think it's either ranch or blue cheese on a Cobb salad.
Is a wedge salad just like a quarter of iceberg lettuce nothing else?
It's an excuse to get blue cheese dressing and bacon bits in your mouth. Yes, that's it.
So you put bacon... Because that's why it's called a wedge, right?
Yeah, it's just like a wedge disgusting big hunk of, what's it called?
Lettuce,
iceberg
awful.
Lettuce.
Death is real.
Well, thank you for that insight.
Set
dressing.
Where did you read this background information?
I read
it. And why were you so sure Jesse read it, too?
I'm not sure Jesse read it, but I know Jesse has a habit looking at background information.
Unquestionably.
On this television program that we do the podcast about.
You're right.
That's why he's got that moleskin notebook. And he's got he writes down all these notes, handwritten
notes. He makes a notebook out of moles? Like skin moles?
Yeah.
Moleskin.
I think it takes 100 moles per notebook.
That's so gross.
That's why they're so expensive.
100 moles? No, it would take thousands of human skin. No, I'm talking about skin moles.
You grossed me out.
That is pretty
I was going to go on a whole riff about how his moleskin still has like the little mole noses.
Okay.
Little mole faces.
That makes it sad.
But that's almost as bad.
But yeah, you made it much grosser with like human moles.
Yeah, yeah.
That's really disgusting.
Crude.
Oh, by the way, do you remember...
By the by.
Do you guys remember last week? I think we were talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Yeah, that theme song.
Heroes in a Half Shell. Turtle Power.
Yeah, what year was that cartoon on? Was it
Elias Koteas played... What's his name?
I know. Look, in the movie.
1990 movie.
No, I'm talking about the cartoon.
Casey Jones.
Okay, I'm talking about something. And I'm talking about the cartoon.
Because he talks about not liking punkers. God. He doesn't like punkers.
Okay, can you talk about that after I'm done talking about my thing? Please. Thank you.
And then we're going to talk about Star Trek.
Yeah, I was going to say, you talk about your unrelated thing. All right, go for it.
Because the cartoon, that was on in like the 80s, right?
Yes, I think it was 88, maybe.
And we had a discussion about...
around TNG time.
You were saying it's Raphael is cool, but...
rude.
And I said it's cool, but crude. And according to one website I looked at, it is crude. Isn't that weird?
Excellent.
Okay.
According to one website.
Yeah.
What about those other eight that you looked at?
No,
those ones say rude. Those ones say that this is rude. But I'm going to cherry pick the other one.
No, it was just the first one I came across.
Yeah.
Okay, now you want to talk about Elias Koteas?
Yes.
He was also in that, he had a brief role in that movie with Denzel Washington and John Goodman about the demon. From like, it had that Rolling Stones song. It's all like, woo, woo.
Okay. Getting back to the program. Oh, would you look at that? It's time for a break. So we have
Are
to
you fucking kidding me?
No, I'm not. It's time for a break. So we
What happened? Where have I been?
That's going to pair very nicely with the other one. Do you know the one I'm talking about? Where have I been?
Is that another quote from this episode?
The one you just played. Play the one you just played.
What happened? Where have I been?
And now play Where Will I Stay?
Oh, shit. You're right.
Then you got to play them together.
Okay. Wait.
We'll go to break in a second, but we got to get this done first.
What happened? Where have I been?
Where would I stay?
There we go.
Son of a bitch.
we're going to color those. We're going to put those together. God, I can't wait for the sound-based game show. That's going to be fun. Mm. In the meantime, we're going to take a quick break, and we will be right back. Okay. We're back. Yay! Everything's fine. Everything's okay.
But it is absolutely impossible.
Everything's totally fine.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Spectre of the Gun.
Uh-huh.
I did want to point out, like, right at the beginning of the episode, it's kind of an interesting exchange where they're being warned by this pretty clever looking little crystal thingy, right?
By the way, do you think that this is the remastered version? Yeah. How much of... For example, did the crystal thingy, that was probably remastered?
Oh, that was definitely remastered. Now, I couldn't find a picture of the original. I'm sure it was
what
all
about,
gloopy.
What about the Malkoshian, creepy skull face Malkoshian?
That's original.
That's original. That had to be original. Yes. It looked super
it's
creepy.
Glowing potato monster.
It was fucking terrifying.
It was terrifying.
Oh, that's what you meant by potato monster. Yeah. Earlier. Okay. Anyway.
What'd you think I mean? William Shatner? Zing!
Wow!
Zing!
Wow!
Zabba
dabba! Excellent!
It's funny because I actually find William Shatner to be quite fit. All right. What are we doing here? Oh, yes. Because... See, this is the problem when Jesse, when you're not here, like, we get all goofy. Dan's going to come over and try to... spank me on the butt. No spanking me on the butt. Okay. All right.
Okay, no butt
spanking. We're composing ourselves. I've largely composed myself. Dan's still in process. Jesse's just relaxing at home. So far, he does not appear to show any signs of... terrible illness.
No.
But what I was going to say is, at the beginning of the episode, they're warned off by this thing, and then Kirk and Spock, they're all discussing, they're all like, well, you know, Starfleet's orders are, we gotta fucking go in there anyway.
Right.
And I was like, that's like the most, like, neoliberal, like, U.S. Western, like, we have every right to discover shit.
Right.
Motherfucker.
They didn't even bother to call back home and, like, check up with, like, their superiors or anything. Well, like,
subspace is too, like, a lot of TOS episodes, in theory, they don't have the luxury of doing that.
I know it's not instantaneous, but, like, they could wait a few days.
Well, of course. I mean, like, it's a funny concept in general that they're out there and they're all like, we gotta fucking do this.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
And then when they actually go down to the planet and the potato monster grabs them, Kirk is all like, We come in peace, but we'll fucking blast our way. We'll blast you in the fucking face if we have to. And it was just funny because, like, it was told with such a lack of self-awareness, right? It was not the show producers, the writers trying to make a sort of a satirical joke, you know, highlighting the sort of the hypocrisy of this pseudo-military outfit barging its way in despite being warned off by native peoples.
And even saying, Spock,
we have
even
every right to fucking come and talk to
and
you.
And Spock was even like, they made their shit pretty yeah, clear.
Spock was like, we were warned, yeah, motherfucker. But the lesson's really not about that. The lesson of the show is not saying that they're necessarily wrong to do that, right? The lesson of the show was demonstrate that you respond peacefully and that will look good on you. Sort of like a pacifist ideal, except that they're only pacifist when it comes to actually, you know, the violence, as opposed to the show is not saying to be pacifist or non-aggressive when it comes to aggressive discovery.
Yeah.
Right. It takes the position that you are permitted
you have
to
a right.
discover. You have a right to discover. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just thought that was kind of interesting, that whole sort of arrogantly, hypocritically ignoring the warning from the potato alien.
This is the only warning you will receive.
We have been warned.
We warned you not to show your ugly face in town again.
That guy sounded like he was like little too relaxed or something. I don't know.
Yeah,
sounded a little like.
Well, so now they of course they.
You know, it probably took them like fucking. In Star Trek, it's always like, how long do we get there? Oh, we'll get there in a week or whatever, you know. Yeah. And so, you know, it takes them a week to get there. They can wait a few more days for a fucking. But yeah, you're right. The point is that they wouldn't even think to do that.
This has historical analogs. Where captains that were on these long journeys far from their seats of power, far from their commanders, were given free rein to make decisions about how to proceed. So they're given a basic overall mission. You know, in the case of our age of quote-unquote exploration, you know, is to get gold or slaves or what is some other horrible thing, right? But the captains had leeway to kind of decide what to do. And that's what the TOS in particular is modeled off of. That is the idea is that the Enterprise and her counterparts are out there in deep space, and Captain Kirk was selected because they trust him to make the decisions that will advance the interests of the Federation.
They just sailed right by that buoy. They just like,
I know, it was hilarious.
It's like, fuck it, you know.
We have contacted your buoy and understand its message.
I like he says buoy.
That Malkoshian buoy.
Buoy.
That Malkoshian buoy.
We have contacted your buoy and understand
that Malkoshian buoy.
Buoy.
Hey, buoy. It's like buoy.
Did you know Buoy, Maryland is spelled like Bowie knife?
Yes, I did know that. Yeah.
I bet not everyone who's listening knew that.
Yeah.
Like, a lot of people probably didn't know Bowie, Maryland.
Yes,
is.
And Jesse, and what is the knife called?
Bowie knife.
It's a Bowie knife.
It's a Bowie knife.
No, it's a Bowie knife.
No, it's a Bowie knife.
Yes, it's David Bowie.
No, it's a Bowie knife.
It's a David Bowie knife.
You know, like
knife.
The singer David Bowie?
It's not a Bowie knife. It's a Bowie knife.
David Bowie, like when he's like he's in singing songs in Labyrinth, and he's all like, ooh, boo, I'm David Bowie. Ooh, I'm a ghost.
Don't talk nonsense.
I have a big penis. I'm a ghost.
We warned you not to show your ugly face in town again.
It's a Bowie knife.
Bowie knife.
It's a Bowie knife. Why are you laughing?
Jim Bowie.
Yeah, Jim Bowie.
Why are you? Why are you? Knife. Why are you laughing? What's so funny?
Because it's a Bowie.
It's a Bowie knife.
Because you said Bowie, Maryland is pronounced like Bowie, like a Bowie knife.
I said it's pronounced like a. It's spelled like no. It's pronounced like Bow. No, it's Bowie, Maryland.
Looks like Bowie, but it's pronounced Bowie.
Yeah,
like the
right.
Bowie knife.
Like the Bowie knife.
Like the Bowie knife.
No, it's like the Bowie knife.
I'm going to go with Jesse. Jesse knows about knives.
I'm right. I was
Bowie
right
knife
about,
is
I was,
named for Jim Bowie.
Yeah.
That was his name, Jim Bowie.
I don't know. I was right about the Ninja Turtles thing, so I'm going to say because
no,
of
I don't think you were.
Because
I really
we've
don't think you were.
The Ninja Turtles thing, I am right. It is Raphael's cool but crude. I looked at one website, and the first one I came across said crude, and I think it's highly likely that one is, I would bet you dollars to donuts.
All right. You bring the dollars, I'll bring the donuts, and we'll settle this like proper podcast hosts.
But not bring some
this
problems.
Minute, Spock.
Anyway, where were we? Spectre of the Gun. They have guns.
So Kirk played Ike Clanton. Spock was Frank McClowry. McCoy was Tom McClowry. They did that on purpose. McCoy McClowry.
And, you're doing that on purpose.
And Billy Claiborne, Billy Clowman, Frank McClowry. Ike Clanton.
Ike Clanton.
Billy Claiborne.
William Claiborne.
Frank McClowry. The other Billy.
DeForest
Clanton
Kelly,
gang.
He played one of these characters in either a TV show or movie. I forget about Wyatt Earp in the '50s.
Who did?
DeForest Kelly. He was in tons of westerns.
I really, you know what? This episode made me want to watch a movie that I haven't seen, which is ridiculous. I should have seen, which is I have never seen Tombstone, and I really should.
1993, I believe. Right?
Yeah, I've been meaning to watch that.
And then what was the other one called? Like Earp or something? Wyatt Earp is like
the Earps.
94.
Who does Wyatt Earp think you are?
Morgan, Virgil, and Wyatt, along with Morgan
Doc Holliday.
Good old Virgil.
Doc
Holliday. Morgan, Virgil, and Wyatt, along with Doc Holliday.
Okay, so here's the thing.
Okay.
There were four people that were part of
three Earps and a Holiday.
No,
wasn't that what it was? Was it three Earps and a Holiday?
Okay, yes, there were three Earps, but Virgil. Yeah. But no, but wait.
And some other people historically.
Wait. Hear me out.
All right.
The Virgil.
Voyagel.
Virgil was the sheriff.
Virgil's the sheriff. He's not related to the Earps.
Virgil was the guy who was on the Clanton side.
Yes.
So they only talked about Wyatt and Morgan Earp and Doc Holliday, but there were four guys. Jesse, do you know who that fourth guy was?
It's the other Earp brother.
Yeah. Why they didn't mention that one by name. What was his name?
I'm going to look it up.
Jesse's going to look it up. In his notes, in his copious notes.
So they never really talked about
it. Look it up on the internet.
They never talked about
that
guy.
Yeah, but he was always standing behind them.
He's the one that had a little bit of a floopier mustache.
Yeah.
Then there was because Wyatt Earp, no, it was Morgan Earp was like.
Morgan Earp.
Wyatt Earp, Virgil Earp.
Virgil. So the sheriff was not Virgil. The sheriff was somebody else.
No, the sheriff was Virgil. When they were like,
"Good old Virgil,"
they were talking about the sheriff being on their side. The
sheriff was a different guy.
Oh, it was Bahan or something, wasn't it? I think it was Bahan.
Yeah.
Okay. So Virgil was the. So confusing. Actually, in the script, Chakotay got it mixed up too because they referred to Morgan. In the script, they refer to the actual Morgan Earp in the episode as Morgan Earp, but then they talk about the floopier mustache guy who I guess was Virgil. They referred to him as Morgan as well. Mm. So it was a little confusing as.
It's a little confusing.
He says, I wish it was all over. I saw Virgil patrolling this morning. Good old Virgil. We can always count on him. Like, I don't know. Whatever. Anyway. but there was, Morgan.
Ready to kill.
That's not what I meant to play.
Okay. Where's this going? You're setting something up. Jesse's standing at the ready with a number of facts. A number of historical facts.
The man who kills on sight.
That's the one I meant to play.
All right. The man who kills on sight.
The man who kills on sight.
That guy looked like a psychopath. Like, none of the rest of them looked like psychopaths.
That guy did, I agree.
Looked like he was all still, like, and weird and kind of dorky looking, but in this really, like, intimidating way.
Well, they all seemed real stiff, though.
Yeah, he did.
Maybe it was the clothes they were wearing. They were, like, very starchy looking clothes.
He was holding his left hand all still at one point when he was, like, getting ready to do the fast draw.
Fast draw. Well, okay, so like
the fast draw.
I liked Spock's explanation of the fast draw. He was like, you can't twitch a muscle, or he was talking about like
he was telling Kirk to not move a muscle as he likes and asking him to sit down. But a question I had was about this deadline.
He says, you reseat yourself immediately without moving a muscle. Okay, yeah. I seriously suggest you reseat yourself immediately without moving a muscle.
Reseat.
He said reseat. Without moving a muscle of either hand. If I remember correctly, that would involve you in what was called the fast draw. It initiated unfortunate events. I've never heard of like that described without moving a muscle or either hand as that is the thing that you can't do. It almost sounds like bidding at an auction. It's like just making a twitch. Well, because I know, you know, we all know that standoff situation where they're like standing in the first person.
We've all been in a situation like that. We live in America. We've all been in a gunfight or
but
two.
But I never thought of it as like just even twitching a muscle is going to cause shit to go down. But it makes sense. I just never heard it like laid out like literally like
I mean,
that before.
It's going to be pretty tense. Yeah. And you're going to want to react to whatever movement.
Yeah, it made sense.
Yeah, otherwise you could pull gags on people.
I total gags.
You could juke people out.
I've never, you know? I haven't watched.
Do people still say that? Juke out? Like when you juke somebody out, like on the football field, on the basketball court?
They say people kirk out.
No. I think that means something different. I think kirking out means you're going like crazy or something. Like when you juke somebody, it's when you kind of go like this way, but then you go that way, and they're all like,
yeah.
And then you quote unquote break their ankles. You know what I'm saying? Do the kids still say this? Breaking their ankles?
No, but I will say that.
Do you still curry people?
You've
been curried.
Juke is still a dedicated button in John Madden football.
He's
so
a button.
Dan got curried.
Dan
did get curried.
What was
earlier.
Funny about button?
Because button is like a component of the word button is butt.
In John Madden football, like
where your poops
you're asking me if they still say juke, and I'm saying in John Madden football, it's a dedicated button. So
but you
like,
mean like today, like is in modern John
yes,
Madden football?
Yes, it's a football move.
Do they still make John Madden football?
Oh, of course they do.
All right. Well, I don't know.
How did you curry me earlier? You didn't curry me. Totally I curried you.
I curried you so hard that you don't even remember.
Talk nonsense.
I wiped your brain clean. I juked you so bad. You've been juked.
No.
All right. Well, I don't know what the kids, what vocabulary is the kids are tossing around these days. It's all bleeps and bloops to me.
But yeah.
Bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop. We are young. We are the future. Bleep, bloop, bleep, bloop. TikTok, bleep, bloop. What do you think of that, Dan?
I don't have any opinion.
All right. He's trying to find a sound effect. Jesse, to get back to my question, right? So a huge conceit in this episode is you have these like crazy people who want to murder these other people, but they're all like going to wait till 5 o'clock. And I'm like confused by that whole thing. Historically, do you know anything about that? Like, was that like a reasonable thing or is that just clearly some
fictional
thing?
I don't know really, but it seems like that's a thing that happens in Westerns where
in the
it's
movies
like
a lot,
this,
right?
Yeah, in movies.
But usually it's like high noon or something. Today it was
right,
like it was like
at high noon.
It was like it was like close of business today. It was like here's the memo. The memo says
it could be like close of business. You know, at the end of the day or something, like, you know, don't let the sun set on you or something.
But so what was the deal with the original OK Corral?
Oh, I remember deal. What I was going to say. Oh, I was going to say something earlier, but you juked me out of that point.
All right.
I have not seen enough Westerns to remember the deal.
Don't kirk out on me.
I have not seen enough Westerns to remember the deal with like the fast draw, the situation. Is it a rule? And I might just be making this
Back
totally
to the Future 3.
Shut up, please. thank you.
That was ZZ Top.
I can't remember if I'm making this up completely or not, but is there a rule that the good guy doesn't pull first on the draw? He like, wait, is the bad guy always the one to pull first and the good guy only responds to the twitch of the bad guy? Yeah, or am I making that up in my head?
I don't know. That I could see that being the conceit in certain movies or stories, but in others not being the chosen conceit.
Mm-hmm. What do you say, Jesse?
That sounds about right. Sometimes it's all about just being real fast.
Yeah, but I'm saying like the point is the good guy never pull first.
Well, my understanding is that, and it's a very limited understanding. I must preface my statement by noting that. But my very limited understanding is that in most Western towns, guns were not pervasive. Violence was not nearly as pervasive as suggested in the movies. I don't think it was absent, but I think that stories like the whole situation, the showdown or whatever they call it at the
that's
OK
the word
Corral,
I kept looking for that word showdown. That's what
that's a historical event. And it's a historical
event.
It was a historical event because it was an unusual event. It was not like some thing that was happening all the time that motherfuckers were just getting together and just shooting each other up.
Death is real. We all die.
I don't know, Jesse.
They cannot kill us.
Sort of right on that in terms of
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
I can't kill them!
Because I think some of the surviving members of the gang tried to sue the Earp brothers.
Oh, yeah. Proper American style.
The judges concluded that the Earp brothers were just doing their jobs as U.S. Marshals.
Yeah, and that's the other
by question. By going after criminals.
The other
can question. Can I get through your sword? How can I just kill him?
Jesus Christ.
I can't kill him!
Now, Kirk was kirking out.
I found this most scrumptious material.
That's where that term comes from. Oh, we'll get to her in a second. Yeah. Maybe after the break. No, but the other thing I was thinking about, okay, so Wyatt Earp is a U.S. Marshal, but then you have the sheriff. And right. Like in this show, they showed them as just like hanging out in the same town. And I guess are those just two different levels of law enforcement, or what was exactly the deal?
Like, the sheriff is usually like an agent of the county, officer of the county, whereas the marshal is a federal.
So who was Morgan then? Was he? I know he was an ERP, but what was his role?
Were they all marshals, or was it just the Wyatt that was the marshal, and the others were like his deputies or something?
It's like one of them was one of them was a marshal, the other were deputies, and they had come along with their brother.
Do you think any of them
to this town?
Do you think any of them actually had like a foot long handgun barrel like Wyatt Earp had? I looked that up for like foot long gun barrel. Actually, I looked up 12 inches, but either way you want to think about it. I found one online. A gun that kind of looks.
See those search results, because I know you got saved. I know you got saved. Search turned off.
Yeah, I went to Bing as well, so it was extra spicy.
Oh shit!
Yeah, no, I found one that kind of looked like his. It was called the Buntline Special Colt Peacemaker with a 12-inch barrel. I found it at IronGateArmory.com. So. Buntline Special. But like, I was just thinking, like, do you think anyone...
Buntline Special?
I'm just wondering, did anyone actually fucking have a gun like that? It seemed like a little absurd, but I don't know. Who knows? It's like the Desert Eagle. Like, nobody apparently ever...
Yeah, Desert
Eagle's
ridiculous.
They just made it because they could.
I fired a Desert Eagle. It's a hilarious gun. It's fun. It seems totally pointless for most practical applications.
Maybe if you're going, like, bear hunting with a handgun.
It has a tremendous recoil. It's a very well-designed weapon, but it has a tremendous recoil. The weapon itself is very expensive. The cartridges are hugely expensive.
Are they really?
Yes. I mean, for like 50 caliber, you know, and it was like, what do you need to shoot with that thing? Probably, you probably don't need it.
That's just what I was preparing to inquire.
All right.
Did you notice that Morgan Earp at the beginning, there was a cameo by Charles Bronson before they went to the saloon. This guy came out, you know, and
was that Charles Bronson?
And
okay, he was demonstrating that he was shooting?
This part.
The man who kills on sight.
Yeah, and that guy fell down.
Yeah.
It was Charles Bronson.
That was actually Charles Bronson?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Okay, so Dan's just sitting there smiling at us. I can't tell if there's another shoe to drop or if he's just smiling at us because he's just happy.
Oh, there's another shoe to drop.
Okay.
I don't think that was really Charles Bronson. Okay. Didn't it look like Charles Bronson?
It didn't?
What? Not it didn't look like him at all?
No, I don't know because I don't have a recollection. You noticed something of this character.
Jesse, do you remember that character? Am I the only one?
Yeah, but I don't remember what he looked like.
Well, he looked like Charles Bronson.
Okay. All right.
So just imagine Charles Bronson, and that's what that guy looked like. And it was, from that information, you could say that it was him.
It was, you looked so pleased about that gag. And it was like, not much of a gag there.
I didn't say it was. I was just like.
No, but you had a weird look on you. You had that like fox smile in your face, little fox smile. Mm-hmm. You know the one I'm talking about with those fox eyeballs?
No.
What does the fox say?
That's that song.
It is that song by Ilvis.
Ilvis.
Who I love. I love Ilvis, and I really like that song. Other songs of theirs are better, like you got Pressure, or the Yogurt song is an excellent one, or the one about Stonehenge is another fantastic one.
Interesting.
But
one about like I got a hat and you got a hat.
Yeah, that one about the old man who
fascinating
shoot a horse. Yeah, no, Ilvis is great.
Fascinating.
The what does the fox say? It just mildly aggravated me because we know what foxes sound like. There's foxes live in my backyard.
You're like, wah!
Yeah, they sound like if you're like stomping on a small child.
Yeah, I know. Or it's something. Awful.
They have a horrifying screeching noise.
Yeah.
You know, I respect the and allow for the creative license, but what does the fox say? We know exactly what it says.
That's very nice.
Okay, now let's focus on what does the Russian say? The Russian Chekhov.
The Russian Chekhov,
who has this whole thing with this girl. What was the girl's name? Was it like Vivian or something like that?
No, it's Sylvia.
Sylvia.
Yeah, Sylvia.
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 Now,
so real.
Do we
that
have
girl? She was so beautiful.
Which sums up her role in in this episode, basically.
Do we have enough information in this episode to make a fair guess as to Sylvia's social position and profession, perhaps.
I'm not, I'm, I don't know if I'm going to, I don't know what you're getting at, but like, I don't know if I'm going to guess what her profession
is. No, I'm not trying to get at nothing. I'm not trying to trick anybody into saying anything uncouth.
Billy Claiborne, do you know how crazy I am about you?
But it was just an interesting thing that given the, you know, this is episode came out in 1968, mm-hmm. and I believe it was October or something like that, 1968.
It was October 26th, 1881. Actually, it was
October 25th.
1968. But it wasn't October 21st, 1885.
1968 was not a good year, people. Yeah. It was kind of like when Enterprise came out in 2001. So 1968, given that context,
that was dark
time frame. Well, I mean, you know,
it was 1968 and it was dark.
1968, like, is a very fucked up period of time in the history of the United States, particularly much of the rest of the world as well. But look it up, folks. It was not the, it was not the summer of love. OK, anyway.
Well, that reminds
me. Aren't you going to ask me what I've got in my shopping bag?
Jesse.
The woman that played that character, Sylvia, is actually married to Wavy Gravy.
Wait, to what? To Wavy Gravy?
Wavy Gravy.
Who's
was the guy who was Wavy Gravy. He was the MC at Woodstock and one of the organizers of Woodstock. He's an old hippie commune leader guy.
Is he still around?
Yeah, they're both still around.
Interesting. That
is interesting. She also used to go out with Bob Dylan, and she may have been an inspiration for that song, The Girl from the North Country.
Oh.
Joan Baez has a documentary. She was like with Bob Dylan.
Okay, who's the actor who played the lady? Do we know?
Bonnie Beecher.
Bonnie Beecher?
Yeah.
Okay.
You will be absolutely wild when you see me in the new gown I'm going to make.
Okay, so here's the thing, right? Here's what's confusing to me. I'm not 100% clear on what the writers were trying to convey to us in terms of her, again, her social position and or profession. And what I'm beating around the bush at is that they are using many of the tropes of a 1950s, 1960s Western setup, potentially including the implication of sex work.
Yeah, that's what I thought you were getting at.
Right.
But she could also be a teacher, she could be a grocer, she could be all sorts of other things. Because
she'd be all three.
Because in some cases, they're showing her to be, they're positioning her, and I'm talking in literary terms and character terms, as this sort of romantic, innocent, you know, I'm going to make a wedding gown and we're going to get married, you know, and all that, those conversations we have.
But I'm positive the gown will be ready. And what else is there to stop a wedding?
What else is there to stop a wedding?
Well,
other than when I finish my gown that I'm going to make. So because I go crazy for you, Billy. Because my whole life is about you, Billy. And the only other thing I think about other than you, Billy, is shopping and getting married. Okay? I haven't talked about kids yet, but you know, that's what I'm going to think about next. Like, her, all I thought about her role was it was just like this classic sort of like stereotypical, like old-timey.
There's a but,
like,
though.
Like this sort of like classic sort of image. Of what like the women's role was in some of these things, where it was just a sort of a device to give the male more story and to just sort of like dote on the male and give and further their plot, you know, further the plot of the male.
I agree with all of that. And
I don't think they were implying anything with
No. The problem for me is that yes, I do think that they were sending those signals, but they were alternatively also having her just straight up fucking make out with Chekhov in front of everybody.
Yeah, that was weird.
In a way that was like not signaling the chaste, innocent prairie marriage, right? This wasn't like Oklahoma.
Prairie marriage.
This wasn't Seven Brides for Seven Brothers, which is fucked up in its own way. But
I want a rotisserie chicken when I go to the prairie marriage. And some French fries, please.
Avocados.
So I don't know. To
Colorado.
To me, it was just an interesting part of the aspect of
Super Mario Brothers.
Aspect of the episode that you have this character who, yes, on the one hand, is just sort of meant to be this colorful, distracting Chekhov character, but is being shown in a few different. Lights.
The making out part was kind of weird, but I think that was
not only making out, but straight up doing it in public, ignoring everyone else, and even when he's trying not to, she's like, "No, I'm gonna."
But once again, you could just sort of say that was put there as like to sort of further Chekhov's plot, because the two things you got going on, two like they were quite unprofessional. Okay, you got Chekhov is like
this was quite unprofessional.
Well, Chekhov was like sexing it up, and yeah. And Scotty was.
But you have to be nice to the natives.
And yeah, and Scotty
have good relations with natives.
And Scotty was like boozing it up the entire.
Oh,
episode.
Yes, I did want to talk about Scotty's
half a gallon of scotch.
very apparent alcohol problem.
Half a gallon of scotch.
On top of that, he volunteered to get like sedated. Like,
yes, because he wanted to get high on things.
He took a shot. He's like, just make sure I'm ready by 5, which is like 10 minutes from then. It's like, dude, you're getting sedated. You're not going to be okay by 5. You might be awake, sort of.
Well, he took the shot, and he was like, it's for the pain. And he was like, this is painless. Yeah. He's like, you should have told me that earlier.
Well, you shouldn't have just assumed to take a shot of scotch before you fucking, or bourbon or whatever. Oh, yeah, the bourbon.
Yeah, it was bourbon.
And then Bones was all talking about like, this was medicinal back then.
Yeah, I think he must have small amounts.
Yeah, and I don't know if he was at all serious or if it was a total joke, because thinking back to Star Trek 4 when he was like freaking out about like the medical technology in the 80s, but like here he's like talking about back then bourbon was different then. It was medicinal back then, so just have away. I think he must have been
primitive anesthesia.
It was, but like he was just giving it to Kirk for no reason. Like, I don't know. Like, it could have been a joke, Scotty? But I didn't pick up on a joke, but could have been.
Yeah. Well, what I did pick up on was the clock suggests it is time to take a break.
Okay.
Are you cool with that, Dan?
Yeah, I just wanted to finish that point about Chekhov, but we can.
You want to finish it when we get back from the break?
Yeah, let's do that.
Because what it does is it gives the audience sort of a reason.
They call that a teaser.
Yes, because even though this is a podcast and not the radio, they're not going to wander away from it, presumably, because they're probably listening with headphones or they're on their TV or in their car or something like that. We don't want them to say, okay, we might want them to say that. We don't want them to just be like, you know what, I'm going to stop the podcast here 2/3 of the way through and I'm not going to conclude it.
We
don't want them to do that. So we'll give them a little bit of a breather, and when we get back,
it's like NPR.
Dan's going to lay down some crazy shit, really insightful shit.
It's like, yeah, really insightful.
It's going to be real fucking insightful.
It's like NPR. They'll be like, we'll be right back with Science Friday, and then they're gone for like 10 seconds and then they come back.
And then Ira Flatow comes back. Mm-hmm. It says some science shit.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, we will be right
back. Today was about we'll be back, Hawaiian snails.
But Ira Flatow will not be coming back. One day, that would be He would be a great, great guest.
We should have him as our first guest.
All right. Well, is he based locally?
Is he
in the DC office? Or
sure.
He might be, yeah.
Well, we'll look into that.
Jesse, you're the one to ask about that.
Jesse's got some connections. All right. We will be...
Why do you say it like that?
I don't know, because I need a break. We'll be right back.
I got NPR connections.
Okay, we are now back. We've returned from the break, NPR style, calmly and respectfully.
That's so stupid.
Bunch of jam eaters. Bunch of jam eaters.
Yeah. We're back. We're back. For the final bit of the show.
What I was going to say about like her making out with Chekhov is just that it kind of furthers his role as like being distracted by a woman, right?
In my notes here, I just wrote Chekhov is horny.
Yeah, it's just
he's all, really
so
horny.
So I don't think they were necessarily trying to like give her character by doing that. They were just trying to express that Chekhov was distracted and horny. Basically.
Yeah, no, I get it.
And the whole
I get it.
And there was some kind of.
I just think it's weird because they did both. They gave us both.
Yeah.
Horny lady who could be a sex worker in the context of working in. She's in the bar the saloon. In an old West town, so she could be a sex worker.
Right.
But then she's also the chaste and soon to be married person.
Right. And you could be and you could be right on your end. The way I
may be crazy.
Yes, I do.
Good.
The you could be right.
I may be crazy.
But like when
I make Kirk out.
When I was watching at the time, at the way I interpreted at the time was they didn't even think about like that aspect. To me, it was just they were just like trying to give fuel for Chekhov's character, but you know, I'm up for whatever.
This guy, we got this Russian guy. He's real young. He's real horny.
It was weird that he was.
It makes sense that he's gonna have a pretty lady.
It was weird that
he's gonna get so horny.
He was weird that he was all stressed out about her wanting to get married. Like, didn't they do they not know that like
she's gonna want to get married, and Chekhov is gonna freak the fuck out.
Like,
the kids are gonna eat this shit up.
They they knew it was fake. Like, they knew this whole thing was fake. Yet Chekhov's like having to take the time.
He felt bad. I think the idea was he felt bad.
Yeah, he felt bad, but
it's like feeling bad for a hologram.
Feeling bad for a what?
For holograms.
There we go.
Holograms.
Talk about quick draw.
Holograms.
Hologram.
This guy's
a fast draw.
Yes, this guy's a fast
hologram.
Draw. Yeah, it's not even a quick draw. It's a fast draw.
Holograms.
And we're not talking about Pictionary.
I'm saying, like, even though it was a hologram, and then Kirk was all like
hologram.
And Kirk was all like freaking out about killing people, right? Like,
yes, he was.
I can't kill him!
He was quite literally Kirking out.
And Kirk and Chekhov were both freaking out about some reality shit in a place that was established as not real. Yeah. So I don't know. This is weird. Like, they, I don't know why they cared so much.
It's intended to be the setup for the conclusion of the story, which is the lesson being that, you know, you should be a pacifist, blah, blah, blah. All right. At least not, maybe not a full pacifist, but right. Save things for defense. I forget what they call it, like the non-aggression philosophy or whatever.
I'm just saying where the suspension of disbelief kind of breaks down for me.
Well, that's the thing is I'm agreeing with you. That's the point they're trying to get at. The problem is to get at that point, they have to have Kirk fight with his instinct to want to kill, right? That's the whole thing. That's the whole conversation they have at the end where Spock is all like, but you did want to kill him. And Kirk was all like, yeah, bro, but, you know, I didn't, so it's all good.
Yes, of course.
And,
absolutely right. That's exactly the way it was.
And so I think
we overcame our instinct for violence.
Yeah, I think that's the thing is we're...
Oh, yeah. Ready to kill.
I forgot about that, like, harmonica business. Yeah. The whimsical harmonica. But the whole setup, we're trying to set Kirk up in the third season of Star Trek, where Kirk has previously, on multiple occasions, with no particular qualms at all, has had to severely injure or potentially kill people in order to complete the mission or protect other people or protect his crew, etc. So it stands out as being a little weird here, yeah, because not only has Kirk done that in real life, he already at this stage knows that whatever situation they're in is not like a real thing.
Yeah.
So him assuming that these are cognizant, intelligent creatures that he's interacting with and that he doesn't want to be put into a situation where he has to kill one of them, we just kind of don't necessarily buy it.
Yeah.
The end lesson is still cool. The overall story and episode is still cool, but there are a couple of these points where you're just like, okay, that's, you're just adding a little extra business here that maybe it'd work better without it.
Mm-hmm. I thought the ending was kind of cool about like with the whole, the gas grenade.
The gas grenade.
Yeah. Okay, I was wondering. I was like, is he gonna have some sort of clever intellectual joke here?
Gas grenade.
We're gonna get fucking emails about this. It still surprises me. So okay, look, all right. We've done now. This is episode 222. We've done a whole bunch of these fucking episodes of this podcast, and we've gotten better over time. If you go listen to old podcasts, it's just some bullshit, right? Okay, like it's kind of fun. It's kind of fun, but you know, it's some nonsense. It's some stilted, weird nonsense. You know, anyway, still worth going back and checking it out. But you know, we've made improvements, but it still surprises me that for all the nonsense we talk about on this show and all the foolishness we do with the sound clips and the music and the goofing around and the tangents and all that other stuff, for all of that, anytime we do a little fart joke, we start getting emails with people being like, oh, so, you know, really, guys, you really want to stoop to the level of fart jokes?
A gas grenade.
And we will, no, even me calling this out will not prevent at least two or three emails to be sent to us. I say, look, really, you know, really, you know, talking about,
guys,
you know, poops.
Even you guys. wouldn't think, even you guys.
And strangely enough, there was a line that sounded, hear the end of this line.
All right.
But there seems to be little choice.
Spock like farted in that scene.
Do that again.
But there seems to be little choice. Choice. Choice.
That's funny.
But there seems to be little choice.
Okay. All right.
I'm not joking. I'm not joking.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee. See, now that's why you got to go back and listen to our first episode. Our first episode, that was funny when we were talking about the I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee.
I'm not joking, Lee. That's from Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Right? But actually,
the second pilot.
I did have a point about the gas grenade part because they made that whole gas grenade, and of course it had to be like, they had to have some
hologram.
It had to have some like dry ice steaminess coming out of it. Because
the fart did?
No. Well, the gas grenade. Remember when they had? For some reason, it had to like.
And then fucking James Dewitt is just shoving his face right in there.
Yeah, I know he did.
I'm like, I don't know if that's good for you, dude. And I'm not talking about Scotty. I'm talking about James fucking Dewitt.
Yeah.
He's right. Just like I'm good. He's like, I laddie, I'm just gonna stick my face in it.
But it's funny that they have to make it steam just to give it the effect. That's cool. I'm cool with that. I enjoy it. I'm cool with that. Now it's okay because I'm cool with it. But it didn't work, right? And so, which was interesting because they thought that the gas grenade went wrong. But in actuality, the fact that it went wrong is the thing that went right.
Yes.
Because it
gave them the clue they needed.
That none of it's real. And then Spock went into super philosopher mode.
Yeah.
And then that's really good.
All the lead up to that is made worth it by this whole business with Spock noodling this out.
Yeah, like doing like talking about like what's real and what isn't real and therefore that and this and that.
And then Spock comes up.
So like I thought it was pretty clever.
Spock comes up with a gambit that's very similar to Picard's gambit in Gambit's part 1 and 2.
Wait, is that the
specifically Gambit part 2?
Is that the one where he has to genocide the entire Borg with the virus?
All right.
And he doesn't do it because he's too good for that?
Audience Dan knows full well that the episode Gambit is not related to the one he's talking about, which is I Borg. Dan knows that. He's pretending not to so that he can just do. Dan has to periodically bring up this episode, which we've never discussed. We should just discuss it at some point. I don't know why we haven't yet.
I'm not joking.
I'm not joking, Lee.
But no, Gambit part 2, right? There was Gambit's part 1 and 2. And in Gambit part 2, if you remember...
That'd be funny if there was a Gambit part 2, but there wasn't a Gambit part 1. But there was a Gambit part 5.
Okay. Well, we talked about Gambit. I forget exactly.
Gambit.
It was in episode 187 of It's Got Star Trek. We talked about Gambit's
part 1880.
Part 1 and 2. And those are, it's a pair of TNG episodes. And
a pair of TNG.
In that storyline, there is a similar solution.
A similar solution.
So this week you're not making music with the sound clips. You're just singing songs. Kind of. But you know what I'm talking about, right? You remember in Gambit, they have a similar ending where it's all about just like not, like in that one, it's all about feeling peaceful. But this is like a proto version of it where it's just like, just don't believe that the bullets can hurt you and they won't.
Yeah. And it's not the first, well, maybe it was, I don't know when the first time it was, but that some form of that resolution has been used in other things before. Yeah. It's like
Gambit Part 2 or on TNG.
I think there was like, I don't know if it was an episode of The Real Ghostbusters, that cartoon. Or there was some show I was watching, it might have been that, where it's like some monster was going to get him and they found the way to beat the monster is to not be scared of it and then it can't hurt him. It's kind of like that idea. But I like the
that sounds like A Real Ghostbusters.
Yeah, it does. But I like the lead into that where it was because...
Lorenzo Music.
Yeah, who played the voice of Garfield
and of Peter Venkman.
And Bill Murray played Peter Venkman in the cartoon Garfield. Bill Murray played Garfield. Yeah, it was fucking weird. I thought the lead up to that resolution was really clever about how the gas grenade was going to help him, and then it didn't, and because it broke, Spock like went all super philosophical, and then it led to that
super philosophical.
So it's not
gas grenade.
It's not just so. It's like when you put a song together. It's not just like a cool riff. It's the way you put the riffs together.
Hey Jesse, do you agree with him on that? Do you agree with him that when you put a song together, it's not just the cool riffs. It's how you put the cool riffs together.
Mostly, yeah.
I mean, I'm simplifying it. Right. But my point being,
you guys are the music experts.
You can gather what I'm saying. I'm thinking it's about how you can.
I'm hunting and gathering.
No, it's about you. It's like it's how you can have a single part of something that's clever, or maybe that single part is overused, but if you put it, it's the way you put it together with other parts that like sort of bring it together. So by itself, them being able to dodge the bullet or not being bothered by the bullets because they know it isn't real by itself is cool, but it's not like super cool. But what makes it super cool is putting it together with how they came to the solution, and then Spock getting all fucking like philosophical,
and then he did the mind meld action.
Your mind
to help them
to
out.
My mind,
which was kind of
your
interesting.
Thoughts,
and how they
to my thoughts.
How they cut that in between with them and like the Earps like walking that back and forth, like there was this part.
The bullets are unreal without body. They are illusions only. Shadows without substance. They will not pass through your body, for they do not exist.
Your body.
And then it cut to them like walking in the thunderstorm, and then it goes back to them.
Unreal. Appearances only. They are shadows, illusions, nothing but ghosts.
It
goes on
so long.
They are lies.
This episode came in short, I think. I think
specters
they had to stretch it
without
out.
Without body, like they are to be ignored.
I think that.
And
some of the line readings, and also I think the addition of the mind melds, I think was just a pad out for time.
It was. And I actually, when I played those back, I cut out some blank space in between each time him talking.
I believe you.
But it was too long, but it was kind of cool, though, like watching it go back and forth.
Leonard Nimoy's voice is just also super sexy and all that other business.
So it was like his voice.
About ghosts and bodies.
It was his voice, then they're walking, like it's all suspenseful for their walking.
And the blowing leaves effect guy was on fucking point.
And
whichever person handled the blowing leaves in this episode, they knew what the fuck they were doing. The thunder was on point, the lightning was on point, but the blowing leaves, I've never seen a Star Trek episode that had a better, like the leaves were just coming full force. They're fucking leaves all day.
I would agree with you for the most
part.
I would agree with you for the most part, except at the very beginning when they were looking at the newspaper on the wall and you saw the sign moving back and forth.
Yeah.
That's cool. But if you look in the background, the trees aren't moving at all.
Well, yeah, that's different. Because I'm talking about towards the end of the episode when the wind was blowing.
Yeah, that was
and
cool.
Just, all these fucking leaves were flying around.
Yeah, if you look at like Scotty and Bones, like both of them look like they're like losing their shit. Like,
I know. They're both kirking out too.
I think it's the one with Scotty where it's just Scotty's face on the screen, and then you can see the camera pans, but also like Leonard Nimoy like leans in as like I'm sorry, I'm just Leonard Nimoy. I don't know why I've started saying it like that, but Spock.
you've developed a number of odd affectations.
Yeah, I have.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, not only is the camera panning, but like Spock is like visibly leaning into it too. And it's like it was a bizarre shot. I thought, you know, them doing their shit.
The direction of this episode is really interesting. I think overall, mostly it's good, but there's some really strange decisions that I do think come together and kind of make it work in sort of how surreal things are, but it's definitely different. It's definitely approaching a Star Trek episode in a different way than TOS was normally approached up to this point. But what it did remind me of is the whole half-belt trippy set thing. It kind of gave me a vibe of TNG's The Royale from season 2, where there's that astronaut like in bed or something, and they create this casino around him because the aliens are just like, that's, you know, they use the book as the source of, you know, so they built this like half casino, because again, it was like season 2 of TNG. They didn't have a huge budget, so they just kind of made this surreal thing. So there's some of that vibe going on here as well.
Doc Holliday.
In that scene with Doc Holliday, there was two confusing things. Number one, does the barber make house calls? Because at first they thought you were led to believe that the barber was the doctor.
Yeah.
But it was just the barber.
But back in the day, wasn't the barber the doctor? Wasn't that the deal?
No, but that Doc Holliday was the doctor. They established that Doc Holliday was the doctor because it was his chemicals they borrowed.
Gotcha.
And so I'm guessing the barber made house calls, but then he had barbers.
But he said they were his chemicals.
They said they were the Doc Holliday's chemicals.
Exactly. So they must work. Maybe they just share a space. Maybe it's an office sharing situation.
That's what I'm thinking. Either the barber's making house calls or they share the space.
Yeah.
Because like saying the barber came to Doc Holliday's office.
I could buy any number of excuses.
Yeah. And then what was also confusing about that was something else that I was
hey Jesse, check this out. This guy's vamping like crazy.
Oh my god, there was something else.
He's vamping and he's trying to get to his own point.
Yeah, I know.
While he gets to his point, I will point out a couple of other things that I wanted to talk about briefly. One was Kirk's crazy flying kick, where he does like out of the blue.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Out of the blue.
The super drop kick.
He comes flying through the sky and kicks this guy down. And then he beats the shit out of the guy.
Because for some reason they like, the bullets aren't real, but he still has to kick the shit out of him.
and he's really like just holding him down and just fucking punching the fuck out of him. That's wild.
That drop kick was like too much. I've loved it though.
I know. Me too. Well, especially because it kind of came out of nowhere. It was like all of a sudden, which was really great. And the other thing I wanted to note was that...
I remember before I forget.
Ah,
this is back to the subject of chemicals.
Excellent.
It wasn't egg salad.
Talking about chemicals.
It wasn't clear why Doc Holliday like let him have all his shit. The only thing I can think is that Doc Holliday was like, I'll give him my fucking drugs because maybe they're full of anxiety, so they're going to take drugs and that'll like make them like all like slow.
It
slow
was
react.
Weird.
Like, I could only think it was like he was trying to like let them drug themselves so they wouldn't be as quick to the draw or something. I don't know.
Or my immediate thought was he just figured it didn't matter because he was like, we're going to shoot them all today anyway.
Yeah, but those drugs aren't cheap, I'm sure.
Well, yes, but also other things that don't make sense. You have to file that away into the things that don't make sense about this episode.
Shit. No, I don't gotta do shit.
I'm insisting you fucking do this, which is there's certain things to file away as you just have to accept in this episode. And one way you can accept it perhaps is to say, okay, this is all the result of being an alien construct and not actually reality.
Aliens.
Because the Doc Holliday giving McCoy the drugs, that just straight up doesn't make any real sense, right? Mm-hmm. The other thing is, like I mentioned earlier, this whole deadline of 5:00.
Yeah.
Because it's not clear, because they're like, if you leave, you're fine. But then, like, you know, we know that they can't leave because of the constraints that the aliens have put on. They put the little video game force fields at the edge so you can't leave the town. But like in principle, it's like, oh, you're just asking them to leave town. And then if they don't leave town, then you're going to shoot them. Okay. But if you're going to shoot them, you're telling them they have to go to the specific place. But like, I'm confused. Like in real life, that's why, you know, I was a little curious about the historical event, you know, where I guess the idea was is that the Clantons had every intention of eliminating the Earps.
The Clanton gang.
And had confidence that they could do so, but failed to do so.
The Earps.
Whereas in this construct, the aliens have decided, again, and we didn't really talk about this, but the aliens decided, the potato alien was like, we're going to mine your brain or your computer systems, one or the other, for... a setup to punish you. Mm-hmm. And it's another weird conceit that the alien wouldn't simply say, oh, you trespassed and we'll kill you. The alien is like, no, we're going to craft some sort of psychological nightmare.
That's why the premise was ridiculous.
It's a weird premise.
Unless it's just how they, like their form of entertainment or something.
Yeah,
I don't
but
know.
They didn't imply that, right?
No,
that's
they didn't.
The thing is like, you know, it's a little confusing. You just sort of have to accept, okay, the aliens have decided they're going to do this. Okay.
That Malkoshian buoy.
But again, it's like, okay, you want to murder these people, but you're willing to hang out in a bar with them. Mm-hmm. You want to marry this girl and you're not going to freak out when she's totally making out with this, Billy guy.
You're talking about how, and then at the end, like this part,
we're not going to move from this spot.
And then it did like the zoom in and the zoom out and it like zoom warped them right to the spot. Like,
yes.
We're talking about
that was funny. They did that multiple times in this episode with the zoom in and they got all blurry and then zoom out and they're like in a different.
And that one especially was comical because Kirk was all like, what's going on here? You know, but you're talking about like, you know, all this sort of shit that led him to this point.
All this short
and
of
so
shit.
And so they sort of forced him to that point. They didn't have any choice but to live
no
through that.
No choice whatsoever.
So none whatsoever. Spock was getting a little emotional in this episode when he goes,
well, he is.
My feelings are not subject for discussion, Doctor.
Half human.
I know, but the funny thing is they don't usually, I felt particularly, especially.
My feelings are not subject for discussion, Doctor.
That line, you could tell he was getting kind of pissed there. And then you could tell he was bummed out about Chekhov, you know?
Absolutely.
And then when he was talking about, like, they forget I'm half human, like, you could tell he was, like, bummed. And McCoy felt bad. But then later, Spock complimented him and said he like, when he was like, Doctor, if they had your ingenuity back then, they would have come up with this stuff. And of course, like, Spock wasn't doing that for any emotional reason. He was just telling the logical facts and stuff. But you could tell McCoy was touched by that.
He was being nice. He didn't have to say it. The logic did not require him to make that statement.
Mm-hmm. They just don't usually show his half-human side, so I thought that was interesting.
Yeah. Well, there is character development over the course of the three seasons of Star Trek TOS.
In the annals of the opening.
Silly
gas grenade.
All right. Before we close things down, we of course you wanted to mention that
in the annals of the opening of the Western Sector,
the Western Sector.
This is, of course, using Western tropes, overt from Westerns, as in the Western style movies and television programs that were popular, particularly in the 40s and or the 50s and 60s. So that's the influence they're going with here. Now, Star Trek more generally, right, has a lot of Western influences. It was called Wagon Train to the Stars by Roddenberry. And lots of the storylines straight up through modern Star Trek have sort of the influence story elements and character elements that are influenced by the Western, but that are not overtly using the imagery of Westerns, right? That is actually somewhat rarer in Star Trek. I think oftentimes people think of
rural
Star Trek.
Juror.
I think people think of Star Trek, and one of the things they might think of.
Did you say you people think of Star Trek? Is that what you just said?
Yeah, I did not say you people.
Sound like it's what you
Yeah,
said.
But it's not.
I don't understand.
But people, I think some people think about Star Trek and they sort of get this image from Spectre of the Gun or some of the other episodes like A Fistful of Data's. Mm. That's another overtly Western episode. And then you have North Star from Enterprise, which we discussed in episode 161 of It's Got Star Trek. But really, it's Spectre of the Gun, A Fistful of Data's, and North Star are the three, really the only episodes that I could remember or find in my research that were overtly Western based, mm. right? You do have the honorable mention is in
extra testicles. Is that what you said? Boy, okay. We're going blue tonight.
Lower
I think
deck.
I'm going blue tonight. Lower, you guys aren't.
Lower Decks season 2 episode 8.
Lower what's?
Lower Decks season 2 episode 8. I extricatus.
That gives you choices.
Mariner ends up in a holographic version of the Spectre of the Gun town. And she even comments on the fact that there's like only half the buildings and stuff like that.
Thanks, Agamemnon!
But otherwise, you have lots of other episodes where, you know, there's episodes that take place in old San Francisco or, you know, something along those lines. Or you have the Paradise Syndrome where Kirk runs into some Native American type people on some planet. You know, so you have other things that are like in that direction, but they're not pure Western style. There's just influences from Westerns, which is like Deep Space Nine is like a far-flung fort. You know, that's got some Western vibes to it. And there's tons of Star Trek episodes that have that. But anyway,
evidence!
Well, I provided some just now. you could probably have like a deeper discussion about, you know, the episodes that were influenced by but not directly Western, but this is one of the few actual like here Star Trek doing a Western.
And speaking of Western styles, listen to this, the music part where the piano was playing, the old timey piano was playing. Mm-hmm. It was all fucking discordant, but I think it's just based on something. Let's see if you guys can figure it out.
you think it's all based on a something?
We'll play this right now.
All right, we'll play it.
Death is real.
Whoops. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Hey, Frank, hiya, boys. I didn't think I'd see you again.
Billy. Oh, Billy. Billy, baby, I knew they couldn't keep you out of town.
Oh, you knew that?
Come on.
Yeah, it's like a discordant, almost like... It's not a harpsichord, it's a piano. But
maybe
like,
you shouldn't have.
And pissed up at an opportunity to see you? Don't be silly.
He's taking crazy silly chances with Morgan Earpratt in the same room.
So what do you
think
it's...
Of course.
What do you think
it's based on? The man who kills on sight.
What do you think it's based off of?
I think it's based on that song, Buffalo Gals, Won't You Come Out Tonight? Buffalo Gals, Won't You Come Out Tonight?
Come out tonight. Come out tonight. Buffalo Gals, Won't You Come Out Tonight? Something, 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 something. Yeah, I know that song.
Yeah, so
I mean, I know part of that
doesn't
song.
Doesn't it sound like sort of like some kind of minor, almost atonal version of like that
song? It could
song?
Be. Well, I was going to say that out of context, that music, that discordant music, I think along that, with I think the sounds, they, I think it sounded like a nightmare hell
yeah, right.
to me.
I thought that was really cool because,
it's
yeah,
like
they,
if you're in that movie with the, you know, the Event Horizon.
Yes.
Do you see? You know, with Sam Neill.
Yeah, I know.
Do you see? Like, if that was playing in the background when you go through the Event Horizon hole, I would believe it.
Yeah.
Do you see?
In the Mouth of Madness.
And that's got, no, that's a different movie, but that's a good one, too. it's like, have you read Sutter Kane?
I think they did that on purpose, right? So it was, there was between that and like I was talking about the wind blowing earlier and the leaves and all the episode had really good ambiance. There was a really creepy ambiance right from the beginning before they went down.
Yeah.
I mean, right when they went down and they were surrounded by mist, right starting even there, like, and like you said, the bridge was kind of creepy.
Yeah, it was already creepy on the bridge as the way they were shooting.
And the red sky, like, so I will say that it was really, like, the ambiance was really cool.
That's an interesting episode.
The plot was ridiculous, but it's kind of like, who cares? And I was mostly, like, I was entertained for about half of it. The other half, I was just like, why are we watching, like, a recreation?
It was almost experimental.
Yeah.
In some ways. It was an interesting episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Any final points about that episode? How about you, Jesse? Any final points?
None whatsoever.
All right, Jesse.
Jesse, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it, Jesse.
No, that was funny.
That's cool.
but yes, I think that was an interesting episode to conclude. That concludes our discussion of a pretty cool episode.
Wait, there was something funny. McCoy says that, like, we all don't have that clockwork ticker in your head.
Oh, yeah.
To Spock, and that was kind of weird because what does that mean?
Yeah, I know. I think Spock is a robot.
Well, and
he's not a robot. Spock's not a robot. Like, he's a Vulcan.
A clockwork ticker is like your heart.
Yeah.
Not your brain. Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So he mixed metaphors.
And also, it's like it's kind of hard to. You could.
Too much bourbon.
It's too much medicinal bourbon. Because it's McCoy, you kind of assume that he's like giving him a jab, but it's not necessarily an insult, either. Because it's like, he's really smart.
I'm clever. Fuck you, man. I help solve the problem.
But
he still makes it sound kind of, you know, I'm McCoy and I'm criticizing you.
Hell for leather, right out of history.
Hell for leather, right out of history. I've never heard that before.
Hell for leather. I've heard the term hell for leather.
Half a gallon of scotch.
Like, really, Scotty? Half a gallon?
Half a gallon.
And he just didn't stop drinking. They were going to a gunfight.
No, and we've mentioned it before, but in Star Trek III, there's that great recording we have of Scotty / James doing, like slurring his face a little bit. And he's not drinking in that scene. Okay. Mm. All right. That does it for us this week. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. What will we be discussing next week?
Well, boobly doobly doobly doos.
We don't know yet because we have to run this episode through Dan's bespoke podcast topic selection algorithm. And that will give us a list of episodes to watch. We don't know which show it'll be, which episode, movie, whatever. It's about whatever comes out, it's going to be good.
There's one more thing I wanted to point out.
Dan's doing the Columbo.
I need a mortar and a pestle.
Wait, and?
Yeah. Check out mortar and pestle.
Yeah. What are the difference between those two?
Pestle.
I need a mortar and a pestle.
And
check
pestle.
Out mortar and pestle.
Yes. I believe that both
pronunciation.
Both pronunciations are acceptable.
I know. It's just funny when
pestle
they're...
Pestle and pestle.
It's just funny that they're like... Right, at, they're like not only in the same scene, but like Kirk says it right after McCoy says it.
Do you think behind the scenes it was a whole thing, and like Shatner's ego was like getting in the way, and they were having a big fight about it?
Do
you want to fight about it?
You want to fight?
You want to fight about it?
You want to fight? It's interesting that like in like so close together, you'd think that they would like say the same thing. But maybe it was a big thing.
And we maybe it was Dan.
Maybe Kirk was, or maybe Shatner.
Big huge thing.
Maybe. Well, that's what you suggested.
Maybe Shatner has a big huge thing.
That's what you suggested, not me. Agreeing with you. All you can't criticize me for...
I'm making a thing joke.
You can't...
I'm making a heavy penis joke.
You can't criticize me for...
I'm not criticizing you. I was making a heavy penis joke.
No, you didn't let me finish.
Flopping the penis
You didn't let me finish. You can't criticize me for agreeing with you.
I mean, I could, but it maybe not be cool of me to do that.
You can't.
All right.
I'm not joking, Lee.
But Shatner was all, didn't you say that Shatner was all about making his shit sound different so he'd be more memorable or something?
Yeah, well, that was apparently advice that he got from Christopher Plummer in Canada, because they were working together, and Christopher Plummer, I think, gave him the advice to have a unique cadence.
The other Billy.
Yeah, the other Billy, Christopher Plummer. Early, okay, it's going on much too long.
Spock will have no truck with grief, Scotty.
Keep an eye on our website or social media to find out what we'll be discussing next week. The website is www.itsgotstartrek.com. Social media is at It's Got Star Trek on all the regular social media places. And, of course, we're on YouTube, Facebook, etc. Again, if you want to send us an email, you can write us at feedback@itsgotstartrek.com.
Feedback.
Or you can send us an MP3 or go to www.itsgotstartrek.com.
It's very simple. Nothing can go wrong. Everything has gone wrong.
Fucking shit. /record. itsgotstartrek.com/record to leave us up to a 90-second message, which we will
interesting
play on the air. Okay.
Aye, deeply.
All right. That was a fun one this week, and we look forward to talking to you again next week. A tutelaire.
It's to kill the pain.
But this is painless.
Well, you should have warned me sooner, Mr. Spock. Fire away.